Okay, we'll reconvene the meeting, and Senator Dahl.
See Jamie.
As Senate File 3089.
That's right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This particular bill is just a bill that would allow strategic planting of trees or shrubs around houses and buildings, and then that would be allowed as an direct eligible for direct expenditures as energy conservation improvement. And I have a few testifiers here, and as you can see, they're quite a diverse group. From we have Paul Morlock here from Law's Nursery in Hastings, and I'll let him speak first.
Okay, Mr. Morlock.
Madam Chairwoman, Senators, my name is Paul Morlock, and I'm a shade tree grower from Hastings. I'm here representing the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association and the state's $2.1 billion green industry, which is made up of 3,000 mostly small family-owned businesses. MNLE supports Senate File 3089 because it adds a no-nonsense or common-sense low-tech method of conserving energy to the set of tools available to the utility customers. The Department of Commerce's Conservation Improvement Program directs public utilities to invest their company's financial resources in conservation improvement strategies. Utility companies typically invest in such things as compact fluorescent bulbs versus incandescent, Energy Star appliances, to reach the state's mandated 1.5% reduction in their customers' energy usage. Up until a couple of years ago, a number of public utilities were utilizing tree planting as part of their CIP programs. Then the Department of Commerce came out with an administrative ruling advising against using trees as part of their CIP programs. MNA believes this decision was short-sighted. This bill and a companion bill in the House would merely reinstate strategic tree planting as an improvement eligible for direct expenditures and expense recovery by the utility companies under the CIP. While many investments depreciate, investments in trees actually appreciate over time. Trees appreciate in energy-saving value as trees grow and provide more shade in the case of deciduous trees, and more wind protection in the case of evergreen windbreaks. In the Minnesota Department of Commerce's own Energy Information Center, there's an excellent collection of energy tips, including one called Landscape Properly for Energy Savings. I got this off the website. It suggests in that publication, shade west and east windows, avoid trees in south windows, create windbreaks by reducing wind-caused air infiltration. A windbreak can reduce annual fuel bills by up to 20%. Increased tree canopy. Strategically placed shade trees can reduce air conditioning costs by up to 25%. Qualifying the energy benefits created by planting trees and projecting them forward is certainly possible and is being done today. Steve Downer from the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association and Ken Holman with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources will speak a bit on that issue. In conclusion, I'd like to emphasize that trees may not be a fast and flashy environmental solution, but they are a time-tested and truly workable part of the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dahl, should we just call on your other
speakers? Yeah, let's
speakers?
Go ahead. Kent or Steve?
Steve Downer or...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators, I'm Steve Downer. I work for the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, and MMUA was formed in 1931 and represents the interests of the state's 125 municipal electric, 31 municipal natural gas utilities. And municipal utilities have had SIP-approved tree programs for many years. 34 municipal utilities are involved in the American Public Power Association's Tree Power Program, which has as a goal planting one tree for each utility customer in those cities, and some of those utilities have already done that. And there's a lot of benefits to the program. Mr. Holman can talk about that a little more. The energy savings can be measured. The Sacramento Municipal Utility District worked with University of California, Davis, and USDA Forest Service and came up with a tree benefits estimator, and it sounds similar to some of the things I've talked to Ken about. How it looks in practice, Elk River has a program. They call it the AC Tree Program. It's a first-come, first-served program. People apply. A utility staff person goes out, meets with the customer. They look at the site. They agree, here's a good site for this tree. The customer comes in. They pick it up. It's like a 10 to 15-foot broadleaf shade tree. It's planted. The utility makes spot checks afterward to make sure the person has done what they said, and typically they do. And verification, at least for our members, is fairly easy because the median municipal utility serves a city of with a population of 2,500 people, so it's not too hard to check. And these utilities want to spend their limited funds wisely. The community can see multiple benefits from a structured tree planting program, and municipal utilities would like measurable benefits to be accounted for in their conservation improvement program. And MMUA supports the inclusion of tree planting programs as one component of a well-rounded conservation improvement program. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Holman?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Ken Holman, and it's been my privilege for the last 22 years to work and serve the people of Minnesota through the Departments of Agriculture and Natural Resources, helping communities across the state to establish tree care programs, either start them or build them. And while calculating the benefits of trees has been an inexact science, some of the research that Mr. Downer just mentioned through the University of California, Davis, and other universities across the nation for the last 20 years have come together in a suite of software programs that actually allows the quantification of these environmental benefits, including energy conservation, stormwater management, enhancement of property values, air quality improvement. And I would refer to the handout that you're getting. There's actually two pieces. And the first one, the smaller trifold one, is a result of some action by this legislature back in the late 80s when a report was commissioned to study the carbon dioxide budgets in Minnesota and make recommendations on how carbon might be sequestered. As a result of that report and some funding through the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources, the Minnesota Relief Grant Program was formed. And as a beginning in the early 90s, the university was contracted with to research the strategic design, the placement of trees for energy conservation specifically. And that's what this booklet is. And Mr. Morlock mentioned some of these that were on the Department of Commerce site. These are the same strategies for landscaping for energy conservation very quickly. And the terms here, the little coin phrases, came from community grant recipients in greater Minnesota who decided that it's easier to remember that west is best. In other words, planting a shade tree directly to the west of buildings to shade those windows is going to have the greatest effect. Letting the sunshine in means don't plant trees south of buildings. Yes, Senator?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. And then the more the merrier refers to the fact that increasing the canopy in general over communities is going to provide multiple benefits. And finally, up and over refers to evergreen windbreak plantings that slow winter winds. And we've, through the grant program, cost shared with communities in the prairie part of the state to plant whole community-sized windbreaks to the north and west of their towns. So getting back to the science of calculating these values, the second piece you have is a one-page report from the U.S. Forest Service about Minnesota's success story. We were the first state in the union to take this research from the Forest Service, conduct some studies on the street trees in Minneapolis, and actually quantify the benefits that the street trees alone in Minneapolis provide in terms of energy conservation and the other services I mentioned. And this sheet summarizes that in the green box there, annually saving energy $6.8 million in energy costs. And then you can read the other savings. But the energy cost savings represent about 65% of the overall savings on or the overall benefits provided by healthy trees. I would say that as an example, and this was detailed in the DNR's Conservation Magazine a couple years ago, Minneapolis has approximately 200,000 public trees with a gross annual benefit of $24.9 million. After the cost for associated with the trees, maintenance and all that, removal, replacing sidewalks heaved by roots, was subtracted, the net benefit is citywide annually is $15.7 million, or approximately $80 per tree. Now, Minneapolis is known for their good, well-maintained trees. And in most cities, the public tree population represents only about 10% of the tree canopy. So you can imagine these benefits being multiplied many times. This research and resulted in, and the study in Minneapolis resulted in this guide for communities to plant trees strategically for energy conservation and other benefits, and it has the calculator that was mentioned that can put a price tag, if it's all right for Steve to hold that up, my graduate student. A couple Arbor Days ago, we had to release this research, and the results of that, we put these price tags on all of the trees on the Capitol Mall. This one is the elm, right, that shades the governor's office in the southwest, off the southwest corner of the building. And these are trees that are like in a park. They're out in the middle. They don't really shade the building, provide much wind. So their returns are much lower. And in terms of our cooperation with the utilities, this publication designed for homeowners to summarize the strategic planting and routine care and how to avoid conflicts with utilities is paid for by public the Minnesota Power and Greater Great River Energy. Great River is a cooperative conglomeration of cooperative local municipalities. They print, the utilities print this, and we distribute it.
Mr. Homan, explain to me how a tree out in the middle of the lawn in sure. front of the Capitol saves $1,800 or $1,200 or whatever. Is it the amount of carbon they absorb?
Or? In part it is, but it's a combination of the energy savings and the improvement in air quality.
But what energy savings are there from a tree in the middle of the lawn?
In forests.
For instance, on the Capitol grounds.
Right. There is, as part of the biological operation of trees, those leaves evaporate water, and in the process they use energy, and it lowers the temperature, the ambient temperature, in the air surrounding that tree. If you've walked into a woods out of an open field, you feel that coolness, not only from the shade, but from the air temperature being lowered by that evaporation of water from the leaves. So that's a big part of it. And then the carbon is stored in all of the parts of the tree, including the root system. And with the urban trees, there's this added benefit of carbon emission avoidance when the trees are planted around energy-consuming buildings for conservation.
So the intent of the bill here, is that to count against the savings or the expense in the SIP program?
I think it would contribute to the savings.
As I understand it, Madam Chair, is
Mr. Downer.
There's a spending requirement, which the money would certainly apply toward that, but the real goal is to save energy. And since we can measure the energy-saving benefits, especially from a well-planted tree, we just feel that should count toward the 1.5% energy savings goal that each utility has.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Just one moment. Okay. So I'm not sure who wants to answer this, but in regards to your study in Minneapolis, were these street trees Were they street trees that were already there, or was the savings acquired as a result of new trees that were placed, this study here?
Both. The age distribution in Minneapolis is very wide. There's many young trees. So these were a combination of young, middle-aged, older trees, mature elms in many cases. So the return, although it is delayed as a, you know, after a tree is planted, within, you know, 12, 15 years, some of these benefits are being realized enough to offset the cost of planting and maintenance of those young trees. There is a high upfront cost, as you might expect, in establishing those trees and making sure they're watered, properly planted, and pruned for structural integrity. But after the 12, 15 years, they go into a longer pruning cycle, so the costs overall are greatly reduced as the value of that tree and the value of the benefits it provides accrues and greatly increases.
And Senator Dahl, maybe I misunderstood you, but I thought you said that this language had been in law before and was repealed. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I believe by an administrative ruling that they no longer allowed strategic tree planting as part of a way for energy conservation. As part of the spending that was allowed under energy conservation, is that right?
And how long ago did they disallow it then?
They strongly recommended against it about 2 years ago.
Mr. Morlock? Okay. Senator Dipple.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was curious about that, but also I was going to just comment on your earlier question. The way the Conservation Improvement Program works now is that the utilities continue to have a minimum spending requirement that will cease in a couple of years. But now and into the future, whatever you spend has to be cost effective or cost efficient. That's consistent with what Senator Dahl is proposing here, subject to the energy conservation improvement requirements of this section, which speaks to cost effectiveness. So in no case can the utilities spend money that doesn't ultimately save more money in energy savings.
The cost
that comes in energy savings, and it all has to kind of aggregate to this 1.5%. But I'm curious because when we revised the SIP program last year through the big bill that we always talk about, we just weren't very prescriptive. I mean, we kind of left it to the market, the marketplace of ideas. So we didn't get real detailed about window treatments and specific types of technology and specific practices. We talked more generally about incentives, market tools, technology, and we just kind of made those statements and then left it to the utilities in consultation with the Department of Commerce and the private sector to kind of figure out what would work best. So I'm curious about what exactly did happen, or maybe if Commerce is here, they can tell us why they take a dim view of planting trees, which I know that the folks are not here. Garvey's not over in his corners. We lost him. I'd be curious to know that at some point. Because, I agree. I have big trees that sit on the west side of my house. As a matter of fact, I anticipated the loss of my elm tree in my boulevard, which did happen. And because I was smart enough to anticipate that, I planted a second maple tree in my front yard, which faces west. And thankfully, that's big enough now so it casts the shadow and cools my house in the summer. It makes a huge difference. But I'm a little leery about getting prescriptive like this again. But if Senator Dahl is remedying a mistake that was made by Commerce, I'm curious to know more about that.
Yeah, I'm curious about the administrative decision to eliminate it. Senator Junkbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think part of what might have happened a little bit was a couple of years ago, I don't know if it was the fire chiefs came out with a report on how specific trees were planted in proximity to houses and the ability to get at housing for fires or causing, exacerbating fires in homes and stuff. So I know that just came out a few years ago because we had things going around communities, especially heavily wooded communities, that they needed to get trees away from houses. They were in too close a proximity. So I'm curious, and I'd kind of like to see this matched up with something like that before we move it on to make sure we're not asking for things strategically placed where the fire departments are going to tell us they shouldn't be placed in proximity to the houses. But to answer Madam Chair's question from a little bit ago, two deciduous trees, there's actually a mathematical formula. Surprised that you probably are surprised I would understand that part.
Not at in all terms surprised.
Of sequestering carbon dioxide, so you can actually figure out how much carbon dioxide the boulevard trees take up. And as the trees get older, the mathematical equation obviously works out that they sequester more carbon. And a typical deciduous tree will sequester as much above grade as below grade because the root ball is somewhere in the same size range on that type of tree, but it's a little bit different when you're talking in terms of pines or conifers. So again, if we're going to do use it as an energy conservation thing, we probably want to get a little more detailed as to the types of trees, because there is a lot of research on what does that carbon dioxide sequestration. And otherwise, when we're dealing with that, I'm 100% in favor of it. We've got a lot of science out there that says if we would just replant and reforest in other countries where they're taken down for us, we could eliminate a lot of CO2.
Madam Chair, Mr. Holman has a brief answer on the fire, the fire department's concern.
Senator Holman.
Not yet. Madam Chair and Senator Youngbauer, I do want to just report that the Department of Natural Resource Forestry has had a FireWise program to address the risk of wildfire in residential areas, especially in the Anoka Sand Plain where many conifer plantings. And so they recommend this 30-foot defensible zone, and that has been taken into consideration in these energy conservation designs. So it's a combination of presenting the communities with the whole menu of considerations on risk, wildfire risk, as well as energy conservation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Dahl is first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got just a couple of quick questions. I think first I'd like to direct this to Senator Dibble, if he might know. I mean, in terms of this conservation program, how is this going to be quantified as far as planting a tree, knowing also that it's going to take a significant amount of time for it to really get the full benefits? How are we going to calculate that? And then I have the other question I have is that if I don't know who can answer this one. I'm looking at this brochure. It says it's about taking advantage of, the worst place to plant a tree is in the south part of the yard. And part of the advantages is not only the carbon sequestration, but also the energy efficiencies to the home. And if we have trees that are planted in non-strategic places now, is there going to be a movement to say we need to remove trees to make the home more energy efficient, and that would qualify? So
Mr. Holman, can you?
Yes, Madam Chairman response? And Senator Dahl, I'd love to address that. In fact, our larger concern is solar access and what trees might, in fact, shade roofs and counter the energy capturing effect of solar panels. But I don't see that happening, although I think the recommendation includes, if we have a tree to the south, to at least prune up, if it's large enough, prune up the lower branches so that lower angle winter sun can provide some passive solar gain to the south-facing windows. I don't see it. It would be part of a recommendation to consider replacing large growing trees in the south yard, but
we wouldn't. But and Madam Chair, we wouldn't be looking for incentives or qualifying for this energy conservation program to remove trees or do things like that. And I'm not sure. If I'm understanding what this bill is doing, you're going to be eligible for direct expenditures and expense recovery from planting the trees. So I'm just wondering if there's also going to be a movement to say if we remove trees or we do this pruning, that you're going to want recovery of expenses for those activities as well.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, I would assume that would be part of the recommendations given out there, but I'm not sure about actually allowing the removal costs,
right,
to be part of this? Is that what you're questioning? Right. I think that would be a low priority just because the removal cost would be so much higher than establishing trees in the right place.
All right, thanks.
Senator Olstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've really piqued my interest because we're planting 800 trees this spring. So we're working with our Soil and Water Conservation District, but for very much the same reasons that you've been talking about here, how would this bill affect something like that or want it? I mean, would you be working with Soil and Waters, or is this mainly urban plantings?
I think all this bill does is, excuse me, Madam Chair, in the past, a utility-related tree planting program was eligible as a conservation improvement program expenditure. Now, a couple years ago, the Department of Commerce felt that wasn't a legitimate expense. Well, we feel with the data we have, it is. So all this is trying to do is to, again, make a utility-related, it's utility conservation funds, the use of those funds to go out, work with a customer, strategically plant a tree in a spot where it's going to do some good, that expenditure, and more importantly, that future energy savings will be counted towards the Utility Conservation Improvement Program. There's not going to be any movement to go out there and cut down other trees. It's just a matter of, we all intuitively know we can save energy with a properly planted tree. And there are tools on the website of American Public Power Association. They ask you 6 questions, you answer them, and it estimates the benefits of the tree. It's the stuff's out there. It's not magic. It's not rocket science, and we just think, as we go forward with our conservation programs, that this could be one component of everything else we're doing, and it all adds up and makes sense in the long run.
I'd like to interrupt just a minute. We located the Department of Commerce's recommendation here, and the reason, and it states here, tree planting projects, and this is a recommendation. While the department recognizes the long-term environmental and energy conservation benefits of planting trees in strategic locations near buildings, tree planting projects do not produce verifiable, cost-effective energy savings using the current SIP evaluation criteria. It takes many years for a tree to grow to the size needed to affect energy use, and the tree must be planted in the proper location to create a savings. It says the department recommends that these budgets be reallocated to other energy savings opportunities that will produce energy savings on the utility system during the reporting period. To the extent that these projects continue to be included in a utility SIP, they should be listed as indirect expenditures. And I see Director Garvey here. Maybe he would like to comment on this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Edward Garvey, Director of the Office of Energy Security. What was the date?
2006.
That's key, Madam Chair, members of the committee. In 2007, we changed the law from an expenditure requirement-oriented program to an energy savings requirement program. Prior to that change, the emphasis was on making sure utilities spent the required amount of money in the most energy savings way. But the emphasis in that program was the expenditures. We flipped that to now it's about the energy savings and not about the expenditures. In fact, we want to encourage utilities to use as many techniques as they possibly can to get energy efficiencies.
So have you also changed your opinion about whether it's verifiable and quantifiable?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, part of a component of the demand efficiency chapter that Senator Dibble and members of this committee worked on has a measurement and verification component to it, because we have these kinds of issues across the board where we want to encourage utilities to use and develop new approaches and new techniques and new ways to save energy. But, you know, so you have to sort of figure out what those are, but you need to make sure that as you count them, you're counting them similarly in an Excel territory or in a municipal territory, in a co-op territory. So that measurement and verification is actually a very critical component. And we do that measurement and verification in sort of three ways. One is direct and absolute, making sure that, you know, if it's if their savings were at 100 and they've reduced it by 25, so they're now at 75, we want to make sure we can measure and verify that 25. The other is sort of the aggregate generic, what it was, what it is. Then the third is a modeled. When you put a series of techniques, you do heating and ventilation, you do window replacement, you do boil and furnace kinds of things, you do ground and landscaping kinds of components. What's the aggregate level, and how do you model that? And as Mr. Downer said, you model those, and you get albeit generic numbers, but if you agree on how you've modeled them and you agree on what your assumptions are, then you can basically start calculating it out. And as that report said, there is an indirect benefit to that. So even then, we said there were indirect benefits. And this is why we're sort of not at all in opposition, in fact, have no problems with the proposal before you, because we see it as another way that you can start moving it forward. And it just makes it more explicit that you can.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Alcine, did you have further questions?
Nope. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Sharon?
No, I've had my question answered.
who else had questions? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Deputy Assistant Commissioner Garvey made the point I was going to make. I mentioned it before, but I was just going to draw members' attention to the language on lines 11 and 12 that say that this activity, planting trees as a part of the SIP, needs to be subject to the energy conservation improvement requirements of this section. So while I'm not crazy about, you know, making something, stating a specific technique in the SIP law now, I understand Senator Dahl's motivation because of the decision, you know what's on the record books right now, and we have this, you know, this language which creates that cost effectiveness requirement that Mr. Garvey talked about. So I'm comfortable moving forward with this.
So would it not be easier, though, or more in conformity with our bill of last year if the administration just changed their ruling? Mr. Garvey?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, we can do that, but frequently when we suggest that that's the best approach, members of the legislature suggest that no, we would really prefer to enact it in a statute so that you understand our message. So, if that answer was applicable in all other scenarios, I'd be okay with it. But there are some that you're willing to sort of say yes.
Senator Jungbar.
Well, Madam Chair and OYSR of the energy crowd, I think if you just take your lessons from the MPCA, they just wrote a whole bunch of new rules that went into effect in the beginning of February, and they actually wipe out statute. So if they can do it as a department, you certainly should have access to being able to do that. They didn't ask permission.
Perhaps for another committee, huh?
We'll bring that up in environment.
Well, I was just telling him how to do it without having to worry about us.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, then is somebody that somebody like to move Senator Dahl's? Oh, Senator Dahl can move his own bill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll move Senate file number 3089. You referred to.
You recommended to pass, recommended and I think it can go to the floor.
To go to the floor.
Okay. On that motion, is there any discussion? Then on Senator Dahl's motion that Senate file 3089 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, committee.
We have one more bill. That's Senator Dibble.
Is that 5:30? Frozen in the air.
Pick up something to study here. What are we going to study?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have Senate file number 3093, which very simply extends the ability of municipal entities to finance their energy efficiency projects from 15 to 20 years. This issue was brought to my attention, Madam Chair and members, by the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority. It expands the time frame because a number of the energy efficiency projects that they're undertaking are fairly large in scope and scale, and the energy service companies with whom they work typically finance these projects over 20 years, so that, you know, it's similar to the discussion we had a few days ago. In order to realize those savings, these financing terms need to be extended over that period of time, you know, so that the costs, you know, the annual repayments are such that these public authorities are realizing that savings, you know, in that amount of time. Also, Madam Chair, the resources that come from the Housing and Urban Development Agency are often for terms that do extend over 20 years. And so it's a bit of a technical fix in our state statutes. For whatever reason, these were confined to 15 years, and the payment needed to be not less than 1/15 per year. And so Public Housing Authority was finding themselves unable to finance big portions of the efforts that, oh, Mr. Chair, there big portions of the project that they were looking to undertake. And so this is a technical fix. Oh, and before I forget, I have an oral amendment to make, which I can't remember exactly where that is. So I'll figure that out while we have testimony from the Public Housing Authority. The NARO, the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, which is kind of the consortium of public housing and other housing authorities, is in support of this.
Okay. Senator Dibble, you have some testifiers. I don't have your names up here, so if you'll introduce yourself to the committee and go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Bob Boyd. I'm Director of Policy and Special Initiatives for the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority. And with me is John Plifka. He's the manager of our Facilities and Development Division. The Minneapolis Public Housing Authority is the largest public housing authority in the state of Minnesota, and with our Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program is likely the state's largest affordable housing provider. We house over 25,000 elderly, disabled, and other low-income persons. With our 41 high-rise developments, our family development, and over 780 scattered site units, we have assets in excess of $600 million. On August 8, 2005, President Bush signed into law the Energy Policy Act of 2005. Part of that law allowed for extensions of energy service contracts to go from 12 to 20 years. This was done in order to allow larger payback periods for various retrofits, enabling housing authorities to include more activities that could not otherwise be completed by contracts that covered a lesser period of time. And while Congress increased the scope of these savings agreements for up to 20 years, under this area, Minneapolis Public Housing Authority is also covered by Minnesota law. The 15-year limitation by Minnesota law on our current project has an estimated $10 million impact on the scope of the energy savings contracting work we can do. The additional 5 years allowed by federal law will enable MPHA to include all exterior lighting, which is an important security measure for our residents and neighbors to our properties. It allows us to include medicine cabinets with internal lighting, which is a critical need for thousands of elderly residents who occupy our high-rises. It allows repairs to the building envelope, caulking and selling at all our high-rise, and that's essential for the preservation of some 5,000 public housing units that have served as homes for tens of thousands of elderly, disabled, and vulnerable tenants since they were built in the 1960s and 70s. They also would allow replacement of windows, kitchen exhaust hoods, key heating and air conditioning components, as well as greening technologies throughout MPHA high-rises. This allowance from the federal government is one of the few good pieces of news for housing authorities over the past 10 years. HUD funding for public housing operations have been reduced to 84 cents on the dollar using HUD's own formula as what is required to fund public housing. In addition, we have received continual cuts in our capital fund, and over the years, we have resulted in tens of millions of dollars of shortfalls for MPHA resources to maintain our properties. MPHA's most recent needs assessment, we have identified some $222 million in unmet capital needs. We currently receive about $13 million a year. And with the energy service agreement, we hope to address between $40 to $50 million of those needs and pay for them out of savings, allowing that minor capital fund allotment we get from the federal government to be strategically used for others of those $222 million worth of needs. Finally, last year, the state of Minnesota, including the legislature, recognized the threat of federal cuts to public housing authorities, and you all allocated about $5 million statewide to assist public housing authorities. MPHA received $500,000 of those dollars from this initiative, and we are very grateful. But today, without spending any state resources, and by changing the current law from 15 to 20 years for energy services agreements, you can help us realize an additional $10 million in effect on our resources, enable us to do much more work to be able to preserve our properties for our families and the value for the surrounding community. So we encourage you to consider that option. So
you have a look at the underlying law. Senator Dipple?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remembered the two oral amendments that I'd like to make to the bill, if I could.
Okay.
And the gentleman here can help explain why they're important. The first one would be to insert the word final on page, on line 2.32. Insert the word final in front of the word installation. So 20 years from the date of final installation. And then, Madam Chair, the other amendment would be to strike on line 3.5 the words the first operation and insert the words final acceptance. Those are terms of art, I guess, that I don't totally understand. So the gentleman here can.
Is it that completes it? Okay.
No.
And would you like to speak to that amendment?
Briefly, inserting the word final installation, we believe reflects the definition in section 8B, which talks about final installation. And we just want to be sure from a legal standpoint that our contract reflects that final installation date. Oftentimes when you enter energy services contracting, you have your first installation from anywhere from 12 to 24 months before the final installation. And if you're calculating years of savings, that can make a significant difference. And that the final paragraph dealing with final acceptance also deals with that contract language. And so we just want to make sure that it reflects the language that we utilize under federal law when we enter those kinds of contracts.
Okay. Any Senator Alcyn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. By just extending this 5 years, you were talking about a whole...
Senator Alcyn on the amendment? Okay. Any discussion about the amendment? Then the Senator Dibble renews his motion to amend line 2.32 to put final before, after of and before installation. And on page, on 3.5 to delete the first operation at the end of the sentence and put in final acceptance. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Alcyn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. By extending this 5 years, you were talking about a number of additional things you would be able to do. Is that just because you're amortizing the payments over 5 years, or what's going on with that?
Senator Alcyn and Madam Chair, this has also to do with HUD freezes our utility base at a rate, and then the difference between the savings and the frozen rate achieve a savings for us that then we can use to pay those costs. Obviously, if we can extend that for an additional 5 years, it increases the overall savings of what we save under that opportunity granted from HUD. So it's just not an amortization in and of itself. It results in real savings. But again, some of the savings, in order to achieve them, will actually take the full 20-year period. And a 15-year period stops those areas that I mentioned in my presentation, the areas of some HAVC, some green activities, some windows, some things that take a longer period than the 15 years. And under current law, if it's going to take longer than 15 years, we could not make those kinds of improvements.
Any further discussion on this bill? Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 3093 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations.
On that motion, any discussion? Then all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. That brings us to the end of our agenda. And we have our agenda for Tuesday is printed at the bottom of today's agenda. So we'll see you at that time then. Meeting adjourned.